Welcome to Locked On Heat. On today's show, is there a recruitment drive at the American Airlines Arena, and is Bam Adebayo leading the charge?
Then we'll look at Eric Spoelstra's analysis of defenses around the NBA when he led a clinic on the subject earlier this week. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the Heat and the NBA for FanSided. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat and the league at large for SB Nation and FanSided. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
Eric Spoelstra recently presented at a coaching clinic in Las Vegas, and we managed to find some notes on his talk and provide some insight into his coaching philosophy and his approach, basically, not only to defense, but Heat culture and just other subjects that were pretty interesting to read about, and we'll talk about that later on. But let's start in Miami, David, where Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden were spotted working in American Airlines Arena with some Heat players like Tyler Johnson, Briante Weber, and, most notably, Bam Adebayo, who was recently, the Heat recently picked up his third-year option, so he's at least staying for now, who looked to be having a particularly good time with Kyrie and Durant. There's been some videos and photos that have come out. He's hugging KD, he's hugging Kyrie, laughing, having a good time. David, we've talked about this idea of recruiting back to Miami. With Bam working out and getting along with Kyrie and Durant, is this a small deal, big deal, or no deal?
I'm going to have to go with small deal, and I hate going there because I think it's a little vague, but the reality is, yes, we have absolutely talked about the Heat's need to recruit players, that we don't see enough of that taking place, and it's almost very insular that Heat players work out with other Heat players. And in today's day and age, you need to be able to make those friendships and connections and relationships if you want to land a superstar player to your team. You have to be able to sell them not just on the culture, but on the facility itself, on the potential future teammates, et cetera. And so we had also talked about the possibility that Bam Adebayo, with his Kentucky roots, that might be the best option because there are so many players in the league that went through that process, went through that Kentucky Wildcat pipeline, that at least it opened the door for other options like that in the future. So we're starting to see some of that, even though obviously Durant and Irving and Harden aren't necessarily from Kentucky, it's a start. Now, the reason why I say it's a small deal is because the reality is that these players are probably just stopping off in Miami, one, because they're vacationing and camp opens in 2 weeks. Right. They're on their way to the Bahamas or someplace else. And you know, if they're going to have a stop somewhere in the Caribbean, they want to probably stop in Miami, get a good workout in, and why not use the Heat's facilities? But it still strengthens these relationships, and it's a good thing to see. I don't know if it's necessarily Bam Adebayo saying, KD, when you become a free agent next year, you definitely have to come play alongside me and Kyrie Irving. But at the same time, it always helps to be able to make those connections early on.
And it exposes guys like Kyrie and Kevin Durant to Bam's game, because Bam didn't get a whole lot of playing time last year. KD and Kyrie are probably saying the same thing you and I have been saying for the last year, like, hey, this Bam guy is actually better than Hassan Whiteside. I'd rather play with this guy than Whiteside. And so it exposes them to what Miami has, in addition to Tyler Johnson and Briante Weber, but most notably Bam Adebayo. And look, Barry Jackson has been reported that the only reason that those workouts were taking place was because those guys, like you said, were just happened to be in Miami, needed a place to work out, and asked essentially the Heat to open up American Airlines Arena for them, and the Heat were just like, of course we would. So it sounded like Barry was downplaying it a little bit, but I don't want to downplay it at all, because the reason the Heat open it up is because they're like, hey, can you picture yourself playing here more than just in, you know, early September? I don't want to say that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are definitely coming to the Heat next summer, but this is the stuff that has to happen. Just like you said, like, even if Bam isn't saying, hey, by the way, this is how the cap sheet looks, this is how we can sign both of you next year, this is what we're going to do, don't worry, we'll definitely trade Whiteside, don't worry, we'll definitely trade Waiters, so Kyrie, you don't have to deal with him, KD, you don't have to deal with him either. This matters. I don't know if it's, to answer my own question, I don't know if it's a big deal or a little deal, but it's definitely not no deal. This stuff matters. This is the lifeblood of the NBA. Ever since Dwayne Wade, LeBron, and Chris Bosh came together and decided to go to Miami, this has been how business gets done. right? We've talked about that recently with Haley O'Shaughnessy, about how the fact is that Pat Riley isn't how things get done anymore. It's not just dropping your rings on the table and saying, I'll get you some of these. Right. This is how things get done now. And so it matters that these guys are hanging out with Bam, that Bam's getting along with them. And I still think Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving want to play together. I don't know if it will happen. I'm not saying that it will happen, but they get along really well. They work out all the time together. Miami just seems to be like one of these places, just like LA, where players just go there because it's nice and it's easy to find places to work out there. So, there's just some coincidence, but this is the reason why you have a franchise in Miami. This is the reason why South Beach has the allure, just like the LA Lakers do, just like the LA Clippers are able to even sign free agents. People are there. People like to live there, and so this stuff all matters between people wanting to work out there every summer and between Bam Adebayo getting along with these guys. I just hope that Tyler Johnson didn't ruin it for everybody.
you omitted Rodney McGruder. I'm sure he's a big recruiting tool as well. He was there making life difficult for both Irving and Durant, as McGruder is wont to do. But I think you're absolutely right. Look, if Wade resigns this year, and I'm glad you brought up that point, if he resigns this year, as we expect him to do, it'll be his last season. And from that point, you have to start looking ahead to the future. And that future, for now, at the very least, is best represented by Josh Richardson, who's under contract, Justice Winslow, who we expect to be under contract, and Bam Adebayo. So they're the face of the franchise moving forward. At this point in time, you know, we've answered questions about this in the past, whether or not one of those young players has to be traded away to move another larger contract, say a Tyler or a Hassan Whiteside. But the reality is, at least for now, that they represent that future. And so we need them to be that face, to go and make those connections early on, to establish those relationships. So it is absolutely a positive thing. Look, again, we're not saying, I mean, I know it's easy to get caught up in it, but look, we saw videos of KD in LA playing alongside LeBron James, and especially now with the summer narrative of the team that the Lakers have built, it makes a lot of sense for people to think, well, KD wants to play alongside LeBron James as a Laker. Yeah, that does make sense. But it's also good to make those connections to keep Miami in the forefront of people's minds. The Heat have taken some hits over the last couple of years. They're no longer the kind of premier destination that they might once have been. And I think a lot of that has to do with Dwayne Wade aging out. But it's important to show that there's still a good foundation here, not just because we have a welcoming facility, but because we're South Florida, because we do have young talent on the roster. There's still some things here that make this an appealing option for future free agents, or if you're acquired a trade.
We don't even have to talk about the specific players. We could talk about specifically how Durant or Kyrie Irving could sign with the Heat. But I think the real takeaway here is that Bam Adebayo, after 1 year in the league, is starting to develop a network. And that, again, that's how stuff gets done. I mean, I mentioned the Big Three Heat. That was in 2010, but, you know, you can look at how Draymond Green was texting Kevin Durant right after they lost the finals to LeBron in 2016. I mean, this is how things get done.
We've got videos of Hassan Whiteside shooting threes in an empty gym with his high school buddies in Gastonia, and we've got the flip side of this where Bam is saying, you know what, come to my house and let's get a good run in it. And I like that approach a whole heck of a lot better.
Absolutely. We'll talk about Spo's coaching strategy, specifically about defending pick and rolls and how his approach differs from most of the NBA, but first a quick break. Eric Spoelstra helped lead a coaching clinic in Las Vegas earlier this summer, and the notes from that clinic provide a good insight into his coaching philosophy. Spo's topic was pick and roll coverage, and he talked a bit about Miami's quote-unquote show coverage, right? And so in a league that is switching more and more pick and rolls, the Heat have been reluctant to do the same thing, right? We've talked on this show, David, about how Miami isn't a switching scheme, even though they have a lot of personnel who, like Bam, right, Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson, guys who could, even Deion Waiters and James Johnson, guys who would thrive in a switching scheme. But Spo doesn't do that. He's not been a switching coach, even back to the Big Three era, when he really started to aggressively use that showing scheme. And so for maybe listeners who aren't quite aware of what the differences are, switching, obviously, every time there's a pick and roll, the defenders will switch their coverage, right? So if it's a 1-5 pick and roll, then now all of a sudden you've got a center against a point guard and a point guard against a center. Spo's been reluctant to do that, and he prefers to show, which means that the second person in that in that pick and roll dance will come up to the level of the screen. So, and that's why, you know, we always heard the blitz and show scheme. That's sort of the blitz there, kind of just traps the ball handler for a second there, just to sort of disrupt the flow of the offense, and then gets back onto his man. And so what that does is it maintains the matchups, and you don't end up with having a point guard on a center, for example. And so that's what Spo has preferred to do, right? And in this clinic, he said of showing, quote, "One nice thing about the show and why I don't think it will ever go completely away is because it is a way of guarding the pick and roll while keeping your matchups intact," end quote. So kind of an in-between of switching and then just and not doing anything, just sort of being matchup specific. What did you think about his philosophy on this, David?
I'm not sure I buy it, to be honest with you. I understand he used that show pretty successfully during the Big Three era a lot with Chris Bosh because of his ability to move at the center position and guard and pick up those quicker ball handlers on the perimeter. And that was a big part of why the Heat's defense was so successful during that four-year run. But I understand the personnel isn't there nowadays. But he mentioned something else here. That switching is done, and these are his words, to counteract rotation, where you're forced to kind of just stay engaged, stay locked into to whoever has the ball. You know, I think it's fine to want this to play out that way, but the reality is that players are going to make mistakes defensively, and so you have to be able to make those switches because I feel like that makes up for some of those mistakes. He kind of preaches the show in a perfect world where players would be locked into their ball to whomever they're guarding, that they would stay. And he talks about this, like that you make eye contact, you watch their midsection, you watch the ball. And he talks about how important it is for a defender to kind of stay locked in on the ball handler or whomever they're guarding. But at the same time, the reality is that you're going to lose somebody. You have too many screens in today's offense. You look at the Golden State Warriors having multiple screens off the ball just to create this action where Steph Curry is open from 28 feet away. It's all fine and good to say, yeah, Josh Richardson, stay locked into Steph Curry. But the hell, who the hell can do that? I mean, there's a reason why they're capable of scoring 130-something points on any given night. So I'm not sure I buy it. How do you feel about it?
There's a little bit of an old school approach to it, right? Where he doesn't like the switch. And this is the reason people haven't switched for a long time and why only within the last, 4 or 5 years, it's really become more popular in the league, because there's this old school approach is if you switch, you're not really responsible for anything. And so players rely on the scheme more than they're not held as accountable, right? And there's that sort of, And Spoelstra talks about that. He wants his players to be accountable for defense. He doesn't want them to rely on the scheme so much as they just go lock down your guy, period, end of story. And that is old school. That's very Pat Riley-esque, right? And so, I've thought for a while now that the Heat probably should go to a switching scheme. But the reality also is that they don't have the personnel to do it. Or their personnel isn't best suited to do it. As far as showing goes, it worked really well when you have Chris Bosh at center. It doesn't work as well when you have Hassan Whiteside at center, which has been the problem, right? And so that's why when we talk about Eric Spoelstra all last season, Spoelstra wants Whiteside to go up to play up on the three-point line more often. And people went, why? Why doesn't he just protect the rim? Well, it's not because he wants Whiteside to switch. He wants Whiteside to show against the screens and then get back to go protect the rim, which is what Chris Bosh did so effectively, especially those last 2 years. Or not last 2 years, but 2013, 2014 against the Spurs. He did that really well in the finals. Whiteside's not capable of doing that. They drafted Bam Adebayo probably because of his quick feet. I hope they're not looking at Bam Adebayo as a show kind of center. I really hope that right now they don't have the personnel to get there. But the personnel to be a really good switching team is sort of buried underneath that first layer, right? With Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson, Bam Adebayo.
One of the best defensive plays of last season was Bam Adebayo strapped on an island guarding Steph Curry and doing so effectively. I mean, and then another play later on in another game against San Antonio, LaMarcus Aldridge, where he completely shut down LaMarcus and that turnaround jumper that he had been killing Miami with, and Adebayo absolutely snuffed it out. So, I mean, it's kind of disingenuous, right? Like, it's kind of weird for Spoelstra, and I understand what you're saying about the old school approach. And he mentions that 8 years ago, all bigs were showing and stuff like that. It's like, well, you know what? The league has changed for a reason. So maybe it's time to kind of adjust to that, I think.
I mean, and the adjustment would start with the front office clearing out guys that can't switch.
Yeah,
and that's easier said than done. But
he made a dig too, like on offense. Though he says, you know what's hard to guard? Bigs with an incredible engine.
I noticed that. Yeah, if they he wasn't talking about Whiteside.
Not at all, right? If they have a great motor and they're sprinting to screen, slipping, rolling, that's tough to guard. A big who walks into screens a la Whiteside is easy to guard.
You added the a la Whiteside part.
Yes, I did add that. But I think it was pretty clear who he was talking about. We've seen that a number of times. I mean, Hassan gets the rebound or the block on one end, and he kind of slowly walks or jogs up court and then does this half-ass screen where he kind of makes brief contact. And that's fine if you've got somebody making a quick cut or something like that. But it's so flimsy. Like, sometimes he makes no contact whatsoever in those screens, and that's – I mean, that just shoots down your offense completely.
I think it really does come down to the personnel. If Miami had the showing scheme and still had that, you know, still had Chris Bosh, Shane Battier, and LeBron James,
yeah,
it would be fine. That would work. The Cavaliers, they used the same scheme to beat the Warriors in 2016. It works if you have the personnel. I'm looking at the personnel Miami has and where they could be, and they could be so dominant in a switching scheme. And look, for what it's worth, I think Eric Spoelstra, if it got to the point where Josh Richardson and Winslow and Bam was sort of the new big three was kind of the way the team was built around, I think he would move to a switching scheme. I think if he viewed it as better and his personnel was best suited to switch, I think he would go there. And he's right. The team right now isn't well suited to switch. They're just not. And so I think another big part of this, and we should say that, this is a coaching clinic where a lot of topics are covered. Eric Spoelstra is the king of showing on the pick and roll. Like, he is the guy. So if you're going to have a clinic on showing against the pick and roll, Spoelstra is the brain that you want to pick, right? So I think there's some of that to this too. But he's definitely very loyal to the...
You see this? That he laid down these points about how to show before the screen... You put an inside hand on the screener's back, the help versus slip, attack the ball handler, allow the guard back underneath, and retreat to man with hands in the air as you look over your shoulder. It's fascinating. It's a lot of coach speak, and maybe some of our listeners, like, I'm not particularly big on coach speak, to be honest with you, but I found myself reading these notes, and it was just so interesting because, as we'll talk about in our next segment, not only was it just his breakdown of defense and showing and things of that sort, but just his overall approach to the Heat culture and everything that it encompasses. So I found it very, very interesting.
Yeah, well, let's take a quick break, and then we'll talk about some of that after this. So Spo talked mostly about the pick and roll coverage, and that's what he was brought in there to do, but got in some other stuff about Heat culture and the other things you were talking about, David. And I want to read this one quote because we've heard some of this before, but, quote, "We're not for everyone." He's talking about Heat culture. "We're not for everyone. We're a punchline for a lot of the NBA. People say we do it too much. People say we go too hard. People say we can't relate to the modern-day contemporary player, David. I would say we have adjusted, but it's true. We aren't for everyone." So, David, nothing really new here, but interesting to hear Spo say that they, quote, adjusted. What's your takeaway from that in particular?
About the adjustment part?
Yeah, I mean, he's first of all, that he's hearing that people are saying that we can't relate to the modern-day contemporary player, which we've talked about, and specifically you've talked about a lot on here, especially in regards to Pat Riley and just sort of this culture theme that kind of covers the entire Heat organization. But
it's hard to hear that, you know, that he thinks or he's heard that they're a punchline. I thought you were going to say
it's hard to hear over the dog in the background.
I was not. In fact, maybe he's taking a nap or something, or he's finally died of a heart attack after barking for the better part of the last hour.
It's been like, you know, 3 days.
So, you know, the punchline part, that is hard. Ever since Pat Riley took over the team in 95, and it probably predates that to his tenure with the Lakers and Knicks, he's been known for pushing players to an incredible extreme. And some players worried that it would ruin their career or cut it short or something like this. And we see some of that in today's league with Tom Thibodeau and the Minnesota Timberwolves playing more minutes per game on average than any other team around the league as far as their starters are concerned. And so there are concerns. I don't think, if you look at players like Tim Hardaway or Patrick Ewing or others that have made comments like this in the past, in fact, I think their careers were probably prolonged by Riley's overall approach to conditioning. So I'm curious to see where this punchline comments have come from and whether or not they're still existing. I know it's difficult because I think players do train year round. And so then to come into camp and then be put through two-a-days and not just two-a-days, but intense, grueling practice sessions, I think that could be difficult for a lot of players to handle. Right. As far as the adjustment is concerned, I don't buy it. I really don't.
I wonder what it is. That's what adjustment has. I mean, maybe it's behind the scenes, but that's to me the big what adjustment. He said, "I would say we have adjusted." Like, when? Where? What is the adjustment?
I think they have a vision of themselves being a little bit more open and flexible than they actually are. And that's not to say that it's a bad thing. I mean, I'm kind of prone to thinking it is, but the reality is it kind of appeals to a lot of people. It probably appealed to me when I was younger, when you hear, you know, it's not for everybody. You have to want this. And we've talked about this in the past. And when it comes to like players that are near the end of their career or looking to redefine their careers, guys like Dion Waiters, guys like Wayne Ellington, James Johnson, that's where that kind of approach really, really works. But not for the younger players, I think. The guys that have a little bit more talent and maybe were expecting something different. And you know, that's not to say guys like Richardson, you know, as a second-round pick, he had something to prove. Winslow, as a guy who slipped a little bit in the draft, he had something to prove. And obviously, right. You know, his injury-marred first three seasons of the league, he still has something to prove. But it's just kind of curious. I don't buy that there's been an adjustment. I just think you have to be very select in finding players who want to work. And having said that, let's keep in mind that the average NBA player does want to work. I mean, they work tirelessly. We don't see it, but maybe it's just you're seeing the nuances of it play out pretty starkly, I think, in Minnesota, where you have a player like Butler who loves the work, right, who is tireless in his approach. And then you've got perhaps more talented players like Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, who are a little bit more reluctant at this early part in their career to be so focused and obsessed about the work. And so that's why you got Thibodeau bringing in all these former Bulls players that are familiar with that system, with that approach, and hoping to change the culture. And you've got a lot of that in Miami as well, where you have guys that buy into it and they stay as part of the franchise. You've got that loyalty aspect that appeals to a lot of players. And look, we saw Dwayne Wade tweet about the Minnesota Timberwolves specifically, where he says, look, I don't know Tibbs personally. I don't know him much other than just playing against his teams, but I respect anybody who has that kind of loyalty to his players. So it's clear that that approach is still implemented, not just in Miami, but probably like the Clippers with Doc Rivers, Minnesota with Tom Thibodeau. And so there is some appeal there.
Well, yeah, let's not pretend that it's not a good, like, the Heat are consistently one of the best coach teams in the league. So it's something here. This is working, right? I mean, whatever Spoelstra is doing, it works. They are consistently they work harder on the floor than anybody else. They're better coached. They're better prepared than anybody else. Eric Spoelstra is one of the top three best coaches in the NBA. So whatever it is, so most of this stuff works. But in regards to the culture thing, you know, I would rather obviously have the player that works hard. I just don't know if it eventually pushes guys out. Like, there is that narrative that LeBron just didn't want to deal with the Heat culture. I don't know if it was the work necessarily, but just sort of the other stuff.
The court stuff.
Yeah, just that other stuff. And maybe that's what Spoel was talking about with adjustments. Letting spouses come onto planes or whatever it might be. Just, I wonder, but like for a guy like Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, who were recently working out at American Airlines Arena, they like to put in the work. Those guys love to just play basketball. We've heard them talk about that over and over and over again. Yeah, you know, maybe they've got some, you know, Kevin Durant's got his, you know, Silicon Valley investments or whatever, and Kyrie Irving's, you know, getting his Native American name over the summer and doing all this other extra flat earth stuff. But it is at least worth, you know, they are putting in the work, right? So I think they're allowed to have these extra things, just like maybe that's the adjustment he's allowing, but Dwayne Wade just maybe being more open and understanding of all of Dwayne Wade's extra business ventures, Udonis Haslam's, you know, Subway empire.
I could see that. Like, we heard scuttle that the problem with Josh McRoberts, a name from the Heat's past, that one of the reasons why he didn't ever quite fit in, aside from the myriad injuries, was that he wasn't obsessed with basketball. He wasn't, for lack of a better term, a Heat guy. There was the skill set, and then unfortunately the injuries kind of kept him from being that player. But when you come to Miami, they prefer that you're a tireless worker. They prefer that you have an obsession about basketball. And maybe I'm glad you brought that up, because I do see that that's probably the adjustment that they made. And you know, that they probably not allowed, because I think players have agency to do whatever the hell they want to, obviously, but right. to kind of be maybe not be as
judgmental.
Judgmental about it. That's a good word for it, I think. You know, it's like, Dwayne, sorry, you want to go and drink wine? You want to go to China? You want to go on a run in New York instead of practicing in American Airlines Arena and going through our strength program? That's fine. Right. Yeah, they'd probably prefer the latter, but I mean, at the same time, they have to make those accommodations, especially if you're trying to woo a superstar player back.
So they're not gonna go sign Nick Young, right?
No, I don't think Heath quite fits in there. Which is funny then, because you've got a player like Beasley who they've brought back three times, and you know the reputation is that he's, you know, maybe not altogether there and not much of a worker and just kind of relying on an incredible level of talent. But clearly they felt comfortable in him being able to embrace that work ethic, or else they wouldn't have brought him back a second or third time, to be honest with you. So it's somewhat curious, but I wonder. Like a guy, I'm trying to think, and you mentioned Kyrie. One of the things I read in a piece by ESPN's, I think, Jackie McMullen, about him signing, or the trade that took place to Boston, is that even in between takes when he was filming that movie Uncle Drew,
right,
all he wanted to do was play basketball. Like, he's constantly dribbling, playing the game. He wants to play against, you know, other extras, other stuntmen and stuff like that who play the game. Like, that kind of obsessive behavior, that fits a lot with, you know,
100%. Yeah, I think Kyrie is a great fit for it. I mean, yeah, and that's the thing is, and maybe that's, again, going back to the adjustments, but there is the players are going to do these things. Players are brands now. They have logos made for themselves. They have all these extracurricular things. But a guy like Kyrie Irving, a guy like Kevin Durant, at the end of the day, all they want to do is play basketball, and they're obsessive about it. So I think Kyrie would be a great fit. I think Kevin Durant would be a great fit. I think Jimmy Butler would be a great fit. That sounds like a great trio to win a championship in Miami. But I think that those guys now, we see so much, like, on Instagram with all these young players. You go from, like, a Donovan Mitchell to people as, you know, veterans like Kevin Durant and stuff like that, who are just working out all the time, whether it's in New York, L.A., Miami, doesn't matter. Yeah. And I think that there are a lot of I hope that maybe this sort of comes back around where, you know, they look at a place like Miami where they could just go put the work in and there's nothing else expected of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. So anyway, these notes that we found, you found them, David, and forwarded them to me. I don't know how many people actually have seen them, but they're really interesting. We'll tweet out the notes too, because just a really fun fun way to kind of read through the way Spoelstra thinks, and about not only pick and roll coverage like we talked about, but just Heat culture and all this stuff. There's a lot of good nuggets in there. So we'll tweet that out. You can find that at Locked On Heat, our Twitter account. But for now, that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. As always, you can reach us by email at lockedonheat@gmail.com. And then send mailbag questions for next week by leaving a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes. And just leave your question right there in the review. Support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Also, where you can find the questionnaire that you could fill out with great questions like, who's your Miami Heat spirit player? Are you more of a James Johnson or a Deion Waiters? Are you an Hassan Whiteside? If so, I'm sorry. you could fill out that questionnaire and then be involved in our Miami Heat written preview that will be coming out next month. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Thanks for listening. One last thing before you go. If you run a company and you're unhappy with your return from advertising online or in print, try something new and advertise on a podcast here at Locked On Heat. This is a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. More and more people are listening every day. 50% of U.S. households listen to a podcast, and 1 in 5 Americans between ages 18 and 49 listen to at least one a month. That's according to Nielsen. Thanks to the rise in mobile options from iTunes to Spotify and more, to your smart speaker at home, there's more ways than ever to listen to podcasts. Now is the time to get in. Be ahead of your competition and start advertising on a podcast with us. Our rates are reasonable and based on the number of listens, so you get what you pay for, with numbers to back it up. Whereas print, TV, and radio ads are a shot in the dark. You have no idea who is reading, watching, or listening. That's not the case with podcasts. If you want to reach engaged, passionate, and knowledgeable South Floridians, this is the way to do it. For more information on next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company on the next episode.